Hello, all of you out there in Radio Land. This is KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. And for our virtual listeners, we hope you stay glued to kptz.org. Our website is more than just a way to listen in to today's shows. For example, you can find the biographies of all our hosts and DJs. You can look at calendar listings to see what's happening around town. And you can even sample some of the earlier shows. In fact, much of the original programming on KPTZ is currently available as podcasts. You know, double your listening pleasure. Listen to today's show as well as some early ones. I'm Marianne McNellis. This show is called Our Town. Have you ever wondered who the people are that you see every day around the area? Who was that guy at the post office with a steel gray chin tuft that was at least a foot long? That weird beard was blown in the wind and stepped with the pom-poms on his knit hat. Who is that cop loitering in his car along Discovery? Just how many people are sailing through our infamous 25-mile-per-hour speed zone anyhow? Then there was the waitress down in the boat haven who was planning a trip to Costco. Only in a town like this would she be cheerfully taking down orders from her customers so they didn't have to make the Costco run themselves. This show, Our Town, profiles some of the fascinating people who live and work in Jefferson County. We talk with people who make up the eclectic mix around the peninsula. We talk about their lives, their dreams, and how they ended up on the western edge of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca right at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and baristas, the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County amid the deer, the otters, and even the magnificent soaring eagles. Today, my guest is Martin Mills, one of the 12 co-owners of the Port Townsend Shipwrights Co-op. Few of us realize just how important the boat building trades are to the economy of Port Townsend. There are as many, if not more, people employed in the boat building trades than at the mill, a fact that comes as a surprise to many people. Welcome to the show, Martin.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I always like to begin the show by asking people where they're from. Were you born and bred in Port Townsend?
No, I was born and raised in a little town called Vaughan, Washington, which is down kind of towards Gig Harbor and about an hour and a half away.
Okay, and did you go to high school there?
I went to high school in that area in Purdy Peninsula. The town I grew up in wasn't really a town, just kind of a post office and
just a few things.
Rural little
okay.
Spot. Yeah.
Well, high school kids are notorious for labeling each other. They will go cheerfully ahead and say, you know, she's a nerd, he's a jock, whatever, even if the person themselves don't think of themselves that way. What do you think your peers thought about you?
I probably didn't have a great label. Sometimes I felt like I was a nerd. Sometimes I felt like I was a jock. I kind of feel like I crossed a lot of fences. I didn't really ever feel like I had a clan that I was either labeled as or labeled from. That's kind of how I think I was. But, you know, it was a long time ago.
True, true. Well, were you one of these kids who had a real focus that, you know, I want to be X when I grow up? Was that you?
Not so much. No, that's never been my game. I just like doing a lot of things and exploring a lot of options. And in high school, I don't remember having any solid vision of this is who I was going to be, like I was going to be a fireman or I was going to be a lawyer or an attorney. I didn't have that, like, this is what I'm going to be.
Okay.
I didn't have that focus.
Yeah, lots of people don't. So what did you do right out of high school?
Well, I did wind up going to college. I stayed and worked in Vaughan there for a couple of years and went to community college, and then I went to a university and got a degree at a university and then did a lot of different things after that.
So what was your degree in?
My degree was actually I had a major in outdoor recreation, which was a program that Western offers in Bellingham. And so after that, I did a lot of guiding and commercial recreation outlets in Washington and Alaska.
Well, that sounds like it could be fun.
Packing and climbing and skiing and whitewater rafting and all those fun stuff. So it was fun hogging, pretty much.
So
and with other people, taking people out.
Okay. So why did you stop doing that?
I'd always been a carpenter. I'd done carpentry in high school as a job, and And then I just realized that I could actually do better doing carpentry full time. I did carpentry all through college to pay for college. And financially, it was easier to do carpentry part of the year and have fun on my own instead of having other people pay me to go help them have fun. And it got kind of old. Babysitting kind of gets old. That's kind of the problem with guiding is it's a lot of babysitting. You're taking people that maybe don't appreciate it as much as you do out to places that are very sacred and amazing to you. And it just got where I said, well, I can do carpentry and pay the bills and then do this stuff on my own time.
Yeah, so. I've always thought that some of the people who go on those sort of trips probably aren't physically and or mentally prepared for it.
Right, and for every person that was annoying or hard to deal with, there was an amazing person, but you just get to a point where you're tired of babysitting. It is a really neat trade in its own, but I just kind of got to the point where I wanted to do my own trips and knew that doing carpentry, I always worked with my hands, so it was seemed like the right transition at the time. Kind of quit doing that stuff and did more carpentry.
So were you still based in Bellingham?
After college, I was all over Alaska and Washington, Bellingham, and then down near my folks there in Vaughan. So a lot of different places.
Mm-hmm. At some point, you obviously transitioned from carpentry per se to into boat building. How did that come about?
I was working in Alaska as a kind of mechanic carpenter in camps, geology camps, and doing a lot of carpentry up there. And I had a really lucrative job. I worked about 7 months straight and made some money, and I decided I wanted to go pursue boat building. My dad's side of the family had boat yards, and I decided I wanted to pursue boat building and shipbuilding. And so I drove my Volkswagen bus from Alaska to Maine via Washington.
I hope you did it in August or something.
No, it was September. I got back from Alaska, and I had some money in my pocket, and I said, I'm going to go. Maine's the place to go. This is the place I got to go to learn this stuff. So I went to this school back there and tried it out for a couple weeks and decided that I really didn't want to be in Maine or at this particular school. And my folks were, I was, well, why don't you go to Port Townsend? They've got the boat school, and I was familiar with it and having spent some time in Port Townsend. And, oh, no, I got to be in Maine. I got to be somewhere else. Well, why don't you try Port Townsend? And so between about 10 breakdowns trying to get back, I finally made it back to Vaughan and came up to Port Townsend, and the boat school was, I think they had one spot left. I had enough money to pay for that out of my work in Alaska, so I moved to Port Townsend, I think in December maybe. I think at that point the program started in January, and it was a six-month program.
What year are we talking about here?
That was 96 or 97. I think I got out of boat school in 97.
Okay. And why did you decide on boat building? I mean, you mentioned your family was in that area. What attracted you to it?
Well, I'd always been on the water. And if you're into craftsmanship and a trade like carpentry, it's one of the peaks of that of a trade. You know, it's taking some basic skills and turn it into a real art and a real craft. And what we do in Port Townsend and at the school, it's as much as a craft as it is a trade. And so I think I just wanted to take something. I was pretty good at building square things, and I think I wanted to try doing something that was more challenging. And at the end of the day, you get something that really is beautiful and stands the test of time, has a job, and is functionally beautiful, which is really attractive to me.
Yeah, so. That's amazing. So what was your first real job out of school? Was it easy to just drop into something?
You know, I got probably a combination of really lucky and probably fairly aggressively found a job right away. Actually, I skipped out of school early and sailed a boat for a guy back from Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I got back from Hawaii, I went to the school and there was a little notice on the board that this gentleman wanted somebody to restore his 25-foot sailboat. And I called this man, and he and I got together and looked at this little project, and it turned into a really big project. And I think I spent 6 months restoring this boat and wound up hiring some classmates to help me. I came down to the boatyard, and we hauled the boat out, and I set up a tent, a little shelter, and just went after it. Didn't know any better that I could or couldn't do it. Wound up restoring this boat for this guy, and that pretty much set me on the path of having opportunity in Port Townsend, because everyone noticed that there was a new guy in the back corner of the yard doing his thing, doing a good job, turned out really nice. So I immediately, that was my resume for Port Townsend, and after that, of course, I had lots of opportunities.
Well, you know, I had a friend a few years ago who was working on a boat down there, and one of the things I noticed was that it's a bit social. People wander around and check each other's projects and chat a bit about, you know, oh, that's great, or what are you doing here? And, you know, it's sort of a whole network develops.
It's a very tight network, and nothing goes unnoticed. So for me, that was my tryout into the Port of Port Townsend, and it was noted what this new kid was doing, and
right.
when he showed up and when he left and how he behaved, and yeah. it wasn't
how the project turned
and
out.
I always tell boat school students, they ask me, how can I get a job in Port Townsend? I say, well, you can't just, there's not a lot of jobs that are just sitting there waiting for you. Mm-hmm. You kind of have to make your job, and that if you really want to work in Port Townsend to work on boats, the best thing you can do is buy an old boat, park it in the corner, do a really good job fixing it. Somebody will notice. Show what you can do before you actually ask for a job. And so that's one way. Still happens. You see people in the yard. I know who's new in the yard and who has been there a while, and everyone notices. And if you show up and do a good job and work hard, then there's going to be an opportunity for you.
Sounds great. So you ran an independent company for a few years, and at some point you joined the Shipwrights Co-op. Can you tell me about your thinking there?
Well, I kind of tailgated and did my own thing. This company would be a vague term, a loose term, but I did my own thing. I had a little shop in Point Hudson right there by the sail loft, just a little shed, and I restored a little boat for myself and did odd jobs and worked with Ed Louchard and Steve Chapin down there for a few years, three years, and then transitioned out of there and moved into Boat Haven in the bigger yard, and a bunch of us shared a shop, and we would do jobs out of it. It was a loose cooperative, really. I mean, it was 6-7 people sharing a building, sharing rent, and doing their own jobs. And at that point, the co-op didn't have very many members. It was in a kind of a lull of maybe 7 members. And I knew most of the owners of the co-op, and they had known what I'd done, and we had become friends and people in the community of the port. And they said, hey, you should come over and check this out. Come do a job for us and see how you, if you like it. So I went over to the co-op and worked for them as probably a contractor at the time, doing a small woodworking job. And they said, yeah, looks great. And if you want to be around. And at that point, I think I did my letter of somebody that's interested in being the co-op. You write a letter and says, I'm really interested in joining this organization. I think mine was maybe on a napkin. And so I signed on, and that was, I think, 14 or 15 years ago.
Okay, well, and lots of our listeners probably have vaguely heard about the Shipwrights Co-op, but they don't really know what it is or the scope of it. So you told me earlier there are, at this point, 12 members. But let's just back up a little bit. What year was it founded?
It was 81. I hope I get this right. I think it was 81. It was put together with some workers that wanted to share share your resources. They'd been working over with Mark Burns, and they had kind of gone out on their own. They put together, I think, I wish I had paid more attention, but I think that there was 5 or 6 of them put together a model of a cooperative, a workers' co-op, and they got just basically a patch of dirt. The first building looked about like the size of a phone booth, and started building buildings and shared the overhead, and then would work on jobs, work on jobs independently, but under the umbrella of having this great group organization.
Okay, well, I actually went on the website, and it gives some background. It says, originally, the thinking would service the Alaska fishing fleet, motor vessels, and sailing vessels all over the Pacific Northwest. Lifts that apparently down at the Haven, the lifts can be 60, 70, and 330-ton travel lifts. That's amazing to me. That's huge. And work on diversity of boats, from heavily built fishing boat to luxury yachts, all types, wood, metal, fiberglass, marine mechanics, propulsion, drive, fuel distribution systems, as well as monitoring systems, talented craftsmen. I mean, they've got an extensive website that lays out.
Yeah, we do. We do have a great website.
Yeah.
Does a better job than I can right now.
Yeah, yeah. So any of you listeners who want to get into the nitty-gritty of what can be done by the Shipwrights Co-op, please, I encourage you to go to their website. I think for me, and for probably a lot of listeners, specifics about certain projects give a bit of the magnitude. I know that from reading that you worked on the St. John II, owned by Gary Olson and his family. You're the project manager for that one. Can you tell me what that was about?
When they first came to Shipwrights Co-op, that was probably 8 or 9 years ago. And that was, at the time, a really big job for the co-op. We pretty much gutted the inside of the boat. This is a longliner fish boat. It's been in the family for, I think, about 45 years. They needed a new engine, a bunch of mechanical work done, and some other miscellaneous stuff. So I go to Seattle, look at the boat, and say, yeah, we can do this. And we wound up repowering the boat, new fuel tanks inside, and then a whole new forepeak, which is down below in the boat where a lot of the crew sleeps. We did that. A lot of new electrical, hydraulic systems. And one thing that was at a time when we were just really feel like going gangbusters on the systems and all the parts of a boat. For a lot of years, the co-op did less of that, more focusing more on the woodwork and the structural. Now, we've really transitioned into anything on a boat of any material, we have a pretty great expertise of doing. And it's really turned into a lot of our work has become mechanical and electrical, what we call systems, which might be water plumbing or refrigeration. And so that was fairly early. We were really busting out of being able to do complete giant refits on boats at that point.
That's cool.
That was a pretty good one at the time. It's hauled out right now for its annual maintenance. Another one of the owners is now leading the project because I'm doing the other things. But every year now, this year they're getting a new generator, some paint, some miscellaneous electrical,
cool,
some things. So
repeat customers.
They come back every, and we have this phenomenal family of customers that we see yearly, maybe every other year, that they trust us, we trust them, and it's a really neat thing. So
cool. You're listening to KPTZ, Port Townsend 91.9 FM, or perhaps you're listening to us online at kptz.org. The show is called Our Town. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. Each segment of Our Town profiles one of the fascinating and unique people who make up the fabric of this community. Today, my guest is Martin Mills, who's one of the master shipwrights, who's part of Port Townsend Shipwrights Co-op. Martin was just telling about the work he and his team did in upgrading the St. John II and how that family, like many others, are returning every year or every other year to continue making sure their boats are in top shape. So how many people, owners and workers, are currently part of the co-op?
Yeah, I think we're at about 40 people. So there's 12 owners and then employees. And I think we're running around 40. You know, the last couple of years we've gone probably in the mid-30s to the upper 40s is kind of where we run, depending on the season and what's going on.
So what are the economics? Why do you think it makes sense for you and or others to be part of the co-op versus being independent?
I think that you can only be really great at so many things. And I think that people that are great shipwrights and great at doing systems work and mechanics aren't always great at running a business on the bookkeeping end of it, some of the organization end of it. And if you want to focus on what you're good at, it's nice to have an organization that can share those resources so that any one business owner doesn't have to absorb all the bookkeeping costs, all the insurance costs, all the overhead costs. And so I think the strength of the co-op and the model of a workers' co-op is that you can have more freedom to do what you're really good at and contribute that to the business, and you're able to share some of the responsibilities of running the business. The burden of a single proprietor that has to do all that and be good at what they do is sometimes daunting.
Yeah, I can see that.
I think it allows us as craftspeople to be good at our craft and to focus on that. And our clients enjoy the fact that we are present on our jobs. I'm there every day on the job. I'm not in an office doing all the bookwork every day. We have bookwork to do, and we have to estimate and bill, but we have help in the office, and we are able to share those costs.
Okay, so the co-op itself has about 40 employees right now. There are a number of other companies down there at Boat Haven, and the estimates I've heard are anywhere between 200 and 400 people working there at any given time. And if you think of that in perspective, the mill has about 300 people. So there are as many, if not more, people employed in Boat Haven, and I don't think a lot of our listeners really appreciate that. Now, in recent weeks, there's been a lot of talk, a lot of stories in the local newspaper about infrastructure for the port. And obviously, issues like that impact the Shipwrights Co-op a lot. So I'd like to get your view a bit about what is needed in terms of infrastructure.
Yeah, it's a big topic right now, and the port's up against some infrastructure costs that are daunting to them, and I think everyone appreciates that. I believe the port needs to focus on is continuing to provide opportunity for small business, medium-sized businesses, our-sized businesses, but you remember the way I got here was in the back of a truck. And now I've become an employer of some version of 40 people, family wage jobs. So if we shut the door to that or don't encourage that small business coming to town, it can be a business that lives in town that wants to expand or have the security of a long-term lease. What we need to focus on in the port is people come to Port Townsend because of the people that are working on their boats and the people that are hauling the boat. And the restaurants that are in the port that are serving them a friendly lunch and the resources, they don't come here for a patch of gravel to put their boat on. They come here because it's a community, they can get all their work done, and they can do it with people that treat their job as a craft, not as just a job. The minute that we put the bottom line in front of that, and if it discourages smaller businesses from being able to expand and invest in this town, it will be really hard to continue to get the top-notch clientele that we get. We have a phenomenal reputation in Port Townsend, and it's because of the integrity of the craftspeople here, not because it's a patch of dirt.
One thing I think a lot of people don't realize is when someone brings in a boat, there are shipwrights working on the boat, but that person and their crew and whoever, they're spending money in town. You know, they're staying at hotels, they're going to restaurants, movies, buying groceries at Safeway, whatever. So the economic input is considerable.
We've had a lot of conversations recently about needing to really get an accurate study of an economic impact statement. I don't think everyone realizes all that those impacts are. Last year, I had a boat haul out. They were there for 3 months. There were four people living on the boat working. These were fishermen. They rented a house. They bought new tires at Les Schwab. They went to Safeway for their groceries or QFC or the food co-op. They stayed in hotels. They went to the bars, the restaurants. They bought clothes. Their family and friends came to town and went downtown and bought t-shirts and other things that we sell downtown and books. And they bought fuel. They lived their life here, so they brought money from another community and just inserted it into our economy. And I'm not sure we have done a great job researching that impact on our town. And I'm hoping that this economic impact statement that is being developed through the port and the marine trades cooperatively and the EDC, I hope we can really get a full picture of how economically important the port is to Port Town.
Yeah, that would be really good to have that economic statement so people can understand it, because it sounds like for every dollar spent on fixing a boat, more than $1 is spent elsewhere in the community. So that impact is something that people who aren't active in your industry wouldn't really understand. We're running pretty short on time, but I would like to at least raise this. One of the big issues in Port Townsend is obviously gentrification and what impact that has. But you're from an industry with real jobs, real working people. Where's the line?
Having lived my whole life in the Northwest, it's something that I think is one of the biggest threats to quality of life in some ways. Port Townsend's at a critical point of how do we identify ourselves. The reason people come to Port Townsend to spend money in Port Townsend is they drive through the port. It's a real port. They see real people working, doing jobs that are not scripted. It's an industry that is healthy and necessary. The commercial fishing fleet is healthy, and we want to help those out. Private yachting and other boats, it's a healthy industry. I think it's going to be a challenge in the next few years in Port Townsend, as people love to be here, and I don't blame anyone. I came from somewhere else to be here, and it's a great town. It's a great location. It's got so much to offer. But realizing that we need to keep it real and doing that is, it's a hard to figure out where that is other than a diversity of industry, I think, is where it lies. Yeah. And one reason the Shipwrights Co-op has done well is we've always had a diversity to our industry. We work on fish boats. We work on yachts. And it really keeps us healthy because when the economy does different dances and maybe tourism is down, then the fishing industry tends to fill in behind that.
Yeah, you told me the other day that during the Great Recession, in fact, the port did great business because while some of the tourism went flat, let's face it, that's putting it politely, a lot of people didn't come here, or instead of staying for 4 or 5 days, they stayed for one day. But, and some of your business tailed off, the luxury yachts, but you said you had great times then.
Yeah, the fishing industry, through that recession, prices of fish were good, and fish boats need to fix their engines. They need to maintain their boats, their tools that have to be maintained for safety and functionality. We did great through that, and most of the port of Port Townsend did pretty well. And so that's an example of diversity that we can't shut off if we want to have solid family wage jobs.
Yeah.
And to keep this town a working town that has a nice diversity of blue collar mixed with white collar, mixed with tourism, mixed with crafts and industry. And we've got it right now. And there's nothing broken right at the moment, I don't think. And one thing I've always said to the port is this port's not broken. It just needs to, we just need to figure out how to maintain it the way it is. It's in my time in the port of Port Townsend, almost 20 years. In some ways, I really want the port just to help us. And sometimes too much help can be a hindrance. And we just need to work together and figure out how we can get the whole community to help pay for the infrastructure that needs to happen to keep this port alive.
Yeah.
And to get ownership from everyone in this community to realize that this is one of the biggest parts that make Port Townsend what it is, which is a real, real working town.
Yeah, I'm not sure too many people understand the healthy mixture we've got going and what we need to do to keep it going. And I think that's an important thing, and you've made some really important points here. So we're basically out of time now. Last quick question, and this might be hard to answer. What do you like best about Port Townsend?
Probably the diversity and the talent. It was quite a few years ago, I remember thinking I was really doing good, being a good fancy boat builder, and I was restoring a boat, and I was something. And I remember going to the Port Townsend Brewery and sitting there thinking, oh, I'm really good at what I'm doing. And this gal comes up to me, and she said, what are you doing? And I said, well, I'm restoring this boat. And she said, oh, I just built a boat 7 years ago, and I sailed it around the world, and I just landed in Port Townsend. I thought, I am nothing. Like this. So this town, no matter how great you think you are, there's some talented person that's diverse and has a lot to offer the town right around the corner, and we've got a whole town full of those people. And everyone just needs to stick together and realize that those are the things that make this town great. It's
okay.
The uniqueness of this town. There's so much talent and character. There's a lot of character to Port Townsend.
Well, I want to thank you for being on the show, Martin. You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM or kptz.org online. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. Each episode of Our Town profiles one of the unique individuals who helped make Port Townsend such a special place. My guest today has been Martin Mills, who's one of the 12 master craftsmen who make up the Port Townsend Shipwrights Co-op down at Boat Haven. Most of you might not realize it, but the marine trades here probably employ more people than the mill. It's a vibrant part of our economy. Thanks again for being on the show, Martin.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, and I also want to thank the man in the control room, my partner, John McPherson. He's the producer and editor of Our Town. He smooths out all the stumbles and mumbles, makes me and my guests sound so much better than we do in real life. I'd also like to thank KPTZ's talented program director, Larry Stein, and our chairman, Robert Ambrose. Both of them put in blood, sweat, and tears to make KPTZ the best community radio station possible. I also want to thank you, the listener. Stay tuned and keep listening to KPTZ for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Marianne McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.